turnout for this. But I really involved.
One of our challenge ballots was that one right there, but unfortunately, we know the ballot.
So you don't have any registration problems here? I mean, you don't have any badly registered people?
Yeah, well, as far as the state...
Registered in one precinct, but they live in another?
Definitely, as far as the state printout. Everybody on Large Street is listed as being in Mission, which is a borough precinct. But that was because at that time, there wasn't numbers available on Large Street.
Hi, come on in, sit down.
In the right place here.
Yeah.
How accurate is the registration that you get to the state printout? Are most of those people still in Kodiak?
That I really don't know. See, I've only lived here about 4 years, but I know there is one person who voted. I know the individual, and of course I've been contacted because he's voted on all the city, borough, and state records. He is not on a listing. Well, he tells me he has a registration in his airplane, and when he gets that little card, he'll bring it in to me. I'll know more about it then.
There are some that have been registered year after year and never appear on those forms. Never have. Every year they vote a challenge ballot, and still they're never on those forms.
We found that in Anchorage, too, and that's a problem between the state office and the data processing people and everything else. What they plan to do is get their own computer there at the Division of Elections and do their own computer work. Right now, they're real low on the totem pole, so to speak. They're going to train their own people and do their own computers. In fact, they plan to have computers in several different areas.
Hi, there you go. There's that good map. I wish I had one. Hello there, Bob.
We don't have any problem. I don't have any problem when I register him. I just take him to the map and I ask him, you know, show me where you live.
But we as registrars don't have a map.
Right.
But I know Kodiak anyway, so I can get them to the right precinct, but I get them coming to me. They're all in different precincts where they don't belong.
How are you, Bob?
Real fine.
Yeah, that one's yours.
Well, we hope to change that again by...
Fine, good to see you again.
How are you?
I remember you from Juneau.
We're going to go to our own computer system and, you know, with our own trained people, the Division of Elections. And so they're going to be able to take up these problems as they come along. We've got cases in Anchorage, too, of people that go in to vote. They vote a question ballot, but they don't fill out another voter registration. So they take their ballot down and they say, sorry, you can't vote. But they don't re-register them. You know, and,
they don't do that. I always do it.
Well, you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they just don't do it because in some of the Anchorage precincts, you have real long lines that might take an hour to vote, so they're in a real hurry and they just sort of slip aside.
Well, one of us steps, I always step aside and let my other gals do the work there, and that's how I work with them and get them redone.
Well, we might as well get started. Now, I'm Tim Kelly out of District 8 in Anchorage, which is the eastern Anchorage area in Eagle River Chugiak. And of course, you all know Senator Bob Mulcahy. And I hope you all got copies of the proposed changes to the election code in the mail. If you don't, we have some here. And essentially what we're down here for, number one, is for me to visit Kodiak and look around. I've only been here once before, and the more times I'm here, the more Bob can sell me on the needed improvements and everything else. But secondly, is to give anybody that might be interested in the election code an opportunity to speak on the proposed changes that have been made. Now, these changes are pretty tentative. They were drawn up by Lieutenant Governor Terry Miller's committee and given over to us as a recommendation. We'll take these changes and turn them into a legislative bill that will be pre-filed and introduced the first day of the legislature in January. Hopefully, what we're shooting for is to get enough consensus between the House and the Senate and the administration so that we can get this bill passed through the legislature sometime early February and become immediate law so that they can retrain the election officials and registrars throughout the state. There's going to be a great deal of retraining And we've pumped a lot of additional money, hopefully, into the Division of Elections so that we're increasing the number of personnel they have, and we're increasing the training money so they'll be able to travel more and do it. But a lot of the changes we made, I think, are pretty obvious. But we tried to balance out the various interests throughout the state, be it bush areas or urban areas or whatever. We didn't have anybody on the board that was, I don't think, familiar with the Kodiak or Aleutian Chain area. The Bush representative was Andy Edge, and everybody else was pretty much from Anchorage or Fairbanks. And so we might have made some changes in here, particularly dealing with absentee voters or with the fisheries situation you have here that's not acceptable to Kodiak. And so if you have seen anything that you'd like to comment on, please do. We'll be sort of unofficial here, and I don't think it'll probably be all night anyway.
Well, I have something that's not on here. I don't like this 40% jump the state has.
All righty.
40% votes, it's very costly. We have to hold the election again, and it's not worth it.
Burr.
Well, I mean, that's a state thing. That's a state thing.
Can I make a rebuttal?
Yeah, shoot.
I like it. I know it's a costly thing, but the reason behind it, I think, is a very valid reason. Because if, as in the case that happened locally, if you do not have a 40% runoff, it is true that somebody can be elected with less votes than what all the losers got. And that really means that, you know, 60% of the people voted for somebody else. That's really not a majority, and that is the purpose behind the 40% runoff. And although it's a shame that in runoffs, you know, there doesn't appear to, at least locally, be more interest, the reason that the 40% was in, I think, was a good reason and is valid. And you know, how a community overcomes their problem of getting more people to the polls is probably, you know, a bigger, and it's not a state thing, that is a local option. They can opt out of it.
That particular bill has been kicking around the legislature now for years, and you've both given it the exact same arguments you hear down in Juneau, and the legislature split 50-50 on it, and the bill has never been able to go through that would repeal that 40% provision. I personally kept that kind of stuff out of the bill. We tried to keep everything that was so controversial that it would hinder passage of a reform act, that we kept that particular provision out of the bill on purpose. It's still in the legislature. It could still be acted on. Frankly, I don't know if it's going to or not. It's been around
a long
time.
I'm sure it would, because I had 90% of the voters that day complain about it.
Complain about having to go back and vote again.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the money comes out of our borough thing, since it's a state thing, see. And you just hate to have that happen.
One version that we had in committee was allowing the municipality to determine whether or not they wanted the 40%
around. Can we opt out of it?
Sure, we can. And we voted it down. They tried to opt out of it 2 years ago, Lauren, and the people said no.
Do you want to say something?
APOC,
Alaska Public Officers Commission.
My alphabet agencies are a little bit confusing to me at this point. At any rate, we have a situation locally where no candidate received 40% of the vote, and we had a runoff election, and there was some question as to one of the candidates being eligible. One of my inquiries today is, why wasn't that ineligibility discovered prior to the election? And the second part of my investigation would be to inquire as to why that would not invalidate that whole part of the election, rather than automatically making the number three candidate be bumped up.
When was it discovered that they weren't eligible? Was it something?
Deadline date of filing, Disclosure Act, and why was he on the general ballot in the first place? You know, it should have been that it had to be disclosed before that general one, wouldn't it be?
He hadn't filed one of the.
He did file it, but apparently he didn't fill it out properly.
Well, yeah. the patients. It was
now,
doctors.
Whether that was a deliberate oversight or an oversight, I don't think that's the question. The question is, why didn't the committee discover that and invalidate before the election took place?
Well,
so carrying the thought to what I would feel is a logical conclusion, I would think that the borough should be remunerated for the cost of holding that special election by the state, because it was their committee who failed to recognize this in time. Consequently, the borough had to bear the cost of a special election. This wasn't our oversight, mm-hmm. the state's.
What was the office?
It was for borough assembly.
How many?
3-year term.
And there was one seat?
One was filled. He had 40%, so there was
two seats
open.
Seats.
And then between the two elections, APOC said that he wasn't eligible, or?
Yes, because he didn't file the individual person's names that paid him more than $100.
So the election was irrelevant.
Within the last week or so is when we were notified.
Had he won or lost, the person who was ineligible?
Well, he was able to run. He was a third runner, third highest, and so he was supposed to be on the ballot with one other fellow. They had to take him off and put the next one on the ballot.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, obviously, first of all, APOC is a pretty controversial agency in the state of Alaska for several different reasons, and you hit on one of them. We continually run up against this kind of thing. You can make a case for them that they're just not, you know, they don't have enough staff. They'll make that case for it, that they don't have enough staff. But obviously, there's no excuse for that kind of a situation occurring. On our particular Election Reform Act, we have kept the statutes dealing with the APOC totally separate from this bill, and the reason was because it's such a controversial agency that we didn't want it to, again, hinder the passage of the bill. So this is a different situation that's being addressed in other legislation. There is a move down there to simplify some of the procedures that candidates are required to go through to APOC. Now, their statutes will say that if a candidate does not comply with these statutes, then his name will be stricken from the ballot, or he will be withheld from the office, depending on whether he's been elected since or when the discrepancy was discovered. I would venture to think that if the man sent in a conflict of interest form, you know, do you know, was it a major problem? Did he not list some of the some of his assets?
Just,
is that them?
It was just the same thing. He just didn't list any of the people that he paid $100. It was $100 thing. And I believe, and I may be wrong, that the community has a right to opt out of that, don't they? And they never have.
That's
it's been
right.
up
on a local level.
Yeah.
So Kodiak, per se, could opt out of that requirement if they wanted to. It's been on the ballot several times.
Yeah, they've never chosen to opt out of it.
I know Betty Wallen told me that they've been told that he should never have been on the ballot in the first place.
Right.
But when this notice came, I don't.
Well, see, we had that once before when Dr. Felton was on a school board, and he fought it, but it took his whole term before it was won in court, and he won it in court. So, see, of course, Dr. Ethemia thought this was all taken care of, because the other doctor won the case. Well, now he's going to do this, too.
However, the law was changed after Dr. Felton won the case, which then took care of what the courts had said that Felton won on, and therefore, you know, the new regs say that he will list, and I don't know how it reads, but... The other thing is that I think if you really look into the whole situation, you will find that those things are filed first with the borough here, the borough clerk, and then subsequently sent to the APOC. And they are supposed to look them over. And I don't know what, you know, that should have been caught right then and there that the listings were not complete. I'm wondering if how it got caught was that somebody went up and looked at it and then reported him, which is more than likely how it got caught.
Rather than some APOC staff doing it.
Yeah, my inquiry stems from, I would think that the more logical thing to do would be to invalidate that part of the whole election and give all the candidates another opportunity to run. Because how do you know where those votes would have been distributed had not that man been on the ballot in the first place? I mean, if he isn't eligible, that to me should invalidate the whole election.
Many of the voters question that.
Pardon?
Many of the voters question that, why weren't all the candidates.
I would like to see
at
a ruling.
At least all
on
of
that.
The candidates for the 3-year term.
That's right. The rest of them, besides that one that did
right.
get the majority of the vote.
And I wasn't aware of that, Louise. I thank you for sharing that with me. I didn't know that
well,
the borough clerk's responsibility.
Yeah, that's where you file them. You see,
and they
you
said
really.
And it's on file, it's absentee ballots on file, and you'd think, you know, that they would look them over, but... Yeah, I think you're right, though. You've got a very good point about, you know, when it does happen, why isn't the thing invalidated? But...
Well, we can do this. Obviously, I don't know that much about it. I can get a legal opinion drafted by an attorney at Legal Affairs, you know, ask him, you know, what the ruling was, and
I am assuming that the borough did investigate it, and that either their attorney or someone in the state agency led them to believe that they should do what they did, bump the number four candidate up and put him on the runoff election.
Mm-hmm.
But I question why that's done that way. That's why I would like to look into that. That doesn't seem to me to be fair to the other candidates.
What was the doctor's name?
Ephemio.
John Ephemio.
You'll be hearing from me.
E-U-F-E-M-I-O.
Yeah, Bob, I can get this information from you, can I, later, and then
John, we'll... John went in last week ago, Thursday, to do battle with... In fact, I went in the same area.
We have another one here, too.
Okay. You get that dirty. Well, we'll get a legal opinion for you and let you know what the thing was. Is he upset about it?
Very much so. Position when I talked to him last week, 10 days ago, was that he was going to fight it off. He was on the school board originally when this came up the first time, and he resigned from the school board. And Dr. Spencer, another doctor, went on the school board and then fought it to the end and won. And like I think was pointed out, John thought the problem was resolved, so he ran for the borough assembly and found out that the regulations had just been cranked around to take care of that particular case, and then they put in new regulations that it surrounded it, really didn't do the job that he thought had been done with it, and he was very upset about it.
Had he been given the opportunity to revise his conflict of interest form, or did it just say that's
yes,
it?
Yes, no, he was given the opportunity.
And he said, I won't do that, yeah.
That's right.
That's a problem we have in the professions, and that's one of the things that we ought to try and take care of with APOC, that it's too stringent on professional people. It really should be nobody on a doctor-patient relationship. It should be nobody's business if somebody's spending over $100 a year. But
they have sworn to, you know, revealing, and
yeah.
Some doctors construe this as naming patients and stuff. Also,
you get the same.
Well, they're told they have to name their patients.
You get the same problem.
Mm-hmm. That's
with attorneys
what the state's saying.
And other people feel as strongly as John does about it. Mm-hmm.
But the courts have ruled that they do not have that right, that if they want to run, they have that right, but if they want to run for office, then they give up that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And the court said the same thing in the case of Spencer, that, you know, it was not based on his rights not to reveal. It ended up being based on the rights of anybody under psychiatric care or abortion or, you know, it was a very restrictive. Everybody else, Spencer had the list. And the courts did not totally overturn, you know, the APOC. But then the legislature made some changes under the court's orders again, you know, to say, to take care of the situation. So I don't know what the new regs read, but, you know, I suspect that Dr. Ephemio really, like you said, I think he thought it was all taken care of. But instead what happened was the legislature changed.
Well, when I get back to Anchorage, I'll check with APOC and we'll get a legal opinion. And we'll get back to you particularly and see why they made a decision and what the situation is. I don't know about reimbursing Kodiak for the election.
Did they say it was discovered in Anchorage that he had listed it? I think they were informed by Anchorage here that Ephemio didn't list all the patients.
Essentially, the reason for this whole act is because of the problems we had in the elections last year, and I think It's difficult to say, but from what we've been able to determine so far, a lot of the problems we had is just a matter of tremendous population increases over the years with no changes in the election code to keep up with the situation, be they technical changes or court decisions or whatever. So we reached a point where if we don't want last year to happen again, we've got to go in and readjust the statute so that, you know, we either follow court decisions that came down last year or, in fact, give the court some direction so that all of the elections aren't thrown in the court and we have the perception problem that, you know, the election isn't on the up and up. The most important thing, I suspect, is what we're trying to do is strengthen the process so that the public believes, you know, and in fact the truth is that the person who got the most votes won the election, and it wasn't won by sleight of hand or by a judge somewhere making a decision. That's essentially what we're trying to do. We tried to isolate and locate the problem areas we found in the general elections last year, and take care of them so that they won't happen again. Now, we didn't address the municipal code per se. We are going to be down in Sitka next at the end of this month for the municipal officials conference down there, and we'll begin addressing the municipal code at that point. Does anybody have any particular comments or problems that they know occurred last year during the election that have or have not been taken care of?
It's not a problem, but I was telling Senator Mulcahy, due to Anchorage's problem with ballots being left unattended and everything, this year I had a police escort. Before I picked up any ballots, I went to the police department, the chief gave me an escort, and we never left ballots alone. Mm-hmm. And he went to City Hall with me, we tallied up everything, then we put them in the vault. And it wouldn't be, it wouldn't hurt to put that in. So, no one person is going to be blamed. You've got four people with them in the precincts.
Okay. We have addressed that problem. And we addressed it by saying that when the ballots are moved from the precinct to the counting place, that you're going to have at least one person plus some kind of a security guard, or a licensed officer. You don't have a serious problem in Kodiak because you only have three precincts here. But in Anchorage, where you have, I think we have 82 precincts there or something. That's gonna be some work. But we wanted to, because of the problems we had, we wanted to make sure that kind of thing doesn't happen again. So there will be witnesses from the precinct to the polling place, and I think we've pretty much taken care of that problem.
Now, when it comes to state, though, we have to take those ballots home because there's no way the post office is open after the elections that night. We have to take all those ballots home to mail them in the next day when the post office is open.
Okay, do you count your ballots at night prior to...
Before, yes, and put them in the bags to get mailed and then have to take them home. And the next day, you leave to take them to the post office. What we have to do here, because our postal system, doesn't stay open for us.
It locks up at 8 o'clock, I believe.
Well, no, the windows lock up at 5:30. You need that because you don't trust it anywhere else.
Depends on how it works out.
Well, they're all with the seal on it. You don't have to pay postage, but it's just, the idea is you want them handed over the counter that they are responsible for
that.
Them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I make sure I lock myself in the car on my way home. when it's a state election.
Get a policeman to go home with you.
That's probably a major problem. We don't have a problem in Anchorage, obviously. We've got the Division of Elections there.
Yes,
they lock them up.
But I think you ought to think of all our bush country places, like us and everybody else, that's the small town, because we do all do have to.
Did anybody ever try to take your ballots?
No, but you never can tell. Someday it might happen.
Well, then they just do it over again. Yeah.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem you run into. When you get into a court decision, and because of the court cases we've had in the past, almost every close election now is going to be taken into the courts, because there's so many different ways you can say, well, we should have won it because of this, we should have won it because of that. We've loosened up a little bit the grounds on which you can take an election contest into court. Prior to, as the election law is presently stated, there's got to be actual malconduct by an election official. It's got to be, and you have to go in and prove willfulness and fraudulence and everything else. It's got to be malconduct, criminal malconduct almost, before you can say, well, that cost me the election. See, I mean, somebody could oversleep until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and 100 people weren't able to vote, and unless you can prove that person did it willfully, and that it, then you can't prove malconduct. The guy, I just went to sleep, I couldn't get up, So the committee determined, and I was on a minority view of this, committee determined that the basis for an election contest overthrow now would be irregularity sufficient to change the results of the election. Now, that's going to open it up to a lot of things, what that says is that in a close election, if somebody can find a few things wrong that weren't done correctly, right down to the statute, then they're going to be able to go into court and say, well, that's an irregularity, and I would have won the election had that not happened. So we've got a serious situation there. And in this particular case, they can possibly go into the election office and say, well, we're not they could go into court and say, we're not totally convinced that those ballots, you know, weren't tampered with overnight, you know, when they were outside of a jurisdictional situation. They weren't locked up anywhere. So, you know, this election official probably took them home and did a pencil number on them.
We did take them home, but by that time, you don't care.
You don't want to look at them.
You don't want to see them again.
You can't remember who you voted for.
I think some of the changes you made presume that people are dishonest instead of the opposite.
Right.
The fact is that once those things have been counted, where there is four, and especially in state elections, as many as 16 people watching, for to imply that somebody then took them home and was able to change the votes, I think is pretty far-fetched. I mean, you know,
okay.
Those
to
things,
cheat,
the counts
have
been
board
right.
together.
You'd have to have everybody there agreeing to change those things. And when you look at how your election boards are made up, which certainly give both of the major parties representation on the boards, as well as both parties' representation to observe the counting, and the press observing the counting, and other people there observing the counting. You know, you really got to be dishonest. You've got to have a machine.
You've got to be sharp.
Smart.
And I think some of those changes, maybe in Anchorage you have a bigger problem than anybody else in the state, but I couldn't help but notice in some of the areas that it's almost as though the voter is going to be placed in the position of proving he's a voter.
Right.
In order to vote, and I thought I would like to know how many cases, you know, have you had where, people were irregular in the balloting that then caused somebody to lose the election. I mean, it ought to be malconduct, you know, irregularities or things that happen sometimes beyond one's control, like you closed the poll at 8 o'clock and the guy came at 2 minutes after and wasn't allowed to vote. Well, the truth is the polls close at 8. You know, that is not a malconduct on the part of the election officer. If they were lined up, fine, but, and I know that if they're in the polling place, we let them vote, as I think the rules say you should. And then I got to leave. I do have some comments. And could I just make them on your document here?
Please. Could you announce your name? So we'll
Louise Collins. And the first one I have is on the state election board, the establishment of a state election board and a director of elections. And that, again, I think that you've assumed something that doesn't necessarily happen. One, I don't know where a director of election is any more honest than the lieutenant governor. I like the idea of an elected official being in charge. He is responsible. I know who to be responsible to. I think another board creates insulation from the top, if indeed the top person is doing any juggling of elections, which I don't think ever happened, but I think that is presumed in this report that it happened, and therefore you're going to create a director of elections. I think you're setting up an election board and a director of election to do the very things that by law the lieutenant governor and the people that they hired have been so hired to do. I don't know why you need one. Because all of the things that you have given them the authority to do could be done right now under the direction of the lieutenant governor and the people that he works under. Now, he might need more staff, and they might need to have a better rules and regs written to enforce it. And above all, and the one thing, after having worked on election boards for the last 15 years, you do need is training of election officials and training of registrars, which maybe is good in Anchorage and Juneau and Fairbanks, but in the bush is sadly lacking. But again, in the bush, a lot of people, I think, in the bush do things by instinct. So, but those are the little things that seem to bother the big city people, that, you know, Bob comes in and I say, hi Bob, how you doing? And we check his name and he votes. And perhaps there have been cases, I'm sure, that would probably, if they knew the guy or heard of them, you would walk into some of these bush precincts, and not Kodiak, but maybe into the bush areas, where somebody who had voted for 3 years or 4 years and then suddenly didn't vote for a while and then walked in 4 years later wasn't on the thing, but he still lived there and he was still part of it. And I know that's not right, but I suspect that perhaps it's happened. But again, it's not fraud by trying to change an election. But training of officials has been sadly neglected in this state. There's been very little of it, to the extent where you truly trained anyone. Then the next section under 07, registration of voters, you say in order to register someone, they will have to supply information under oath. Do you mean that everybody will have to go to a notary now to register?
When you sign that.
They're simply saying when you sign something, you're signing
an oath. So it's no different than it has always been.
Except that it makes a false swearing of some kind of a penalty. I think it's probably a misdemeanor.
Okay, and also positive identification. What is positive identification of a person? That if he's standing there saying, I'm Joe Blow, I mean, how much more positive can
you know him for 20 years?
Yeah,
if you know him, that's an exception.
We have
identity.
We have provisions that if an election official knows somebody, they don't have to show any ID.
Okay, but this isn't just that election official. I mean, at the time of the election. If you are registering someone when it isn't the time of the election, you know, the question is what is positive identification? Or is that left up to the interpretation of the registrar? And if it is, then I have no question. If it isn't, I don't think you've spelled it out.
Okay, keep going and I'll find positive identification in here.
I just wanted the 0.070, registration by mail, I think is very good. Because there, you are not confronted with the person. You know, you're accepting something through the mail, and I feel that, you know, then it's great to have, you know, under oath and anything that will prove the guy hasn't been registered, and also where they were registered prior, which is something that has never been on the form, which I think is very good. And, of course, I mentioned your standards for training and of registration officials, I think is excellent. Also, I think it's an excellent idea to purge the rolls every 2 years rather than the present four, because 2 years in Alaska, where there is a great turnover of people or has been, it would probably be certainly reduce that number on the rolls that would be more concurrent to what actually lives here. Again,
you understand what we did on the purge. We added the two local elections into the purging situation. Okay.
Yeah, which I think is an excellent idea. The general
probably won't pass the legislature.
Yeah, because we all want it. We all would like it, yeah.
That's probably true.
It's a pretty controversial item.
Okay. Also, numbering of your ballot propositions is a very good idea.
That was mine, by the way.
Boy, that's a good idea. That is one of the biggest confusions people have ever had on the numbers assigned.
Let me get back to the positive ID. It states, and this applies for registration and at the polls, if application for registration is made in person before a registration official, the applicant shall exhibit one form of positive identification to the official, including but not limited to a driver's license, birth certificate, passport, hunting or fishing license. A registration official may waive the exhibition of identification if he is personally knowledgeable as to the identity of the applicant.
And what number is that read on yours?
Sorry.
Well, this is in the, that's in yours.
This is in the bill itself.
But see, on ours, in that 0.225 here, it just
okay,
reads
that there. Isn't how it reads here.
It doesn't say that you can.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's, if it's there, okay.
If you know them, you don't have to have
it. It's a space problem.
Okay.
Listen, while we're going over, can we hit these, you know, rather than each of us, anything we have a question on?
Okay. Louise, you have to go, right? So
yes.
You want to go through and finish up, then we'll go back.
Mine and then they can Okay, then under, again, 0.215, general procedures for election, 0.225, voter identification required at the polls. Here again, we're asking for, you know, birth certificate, registration card, driver's or fishing license, passport would be required. And I've known many, many people who thought they had to have their registration card or something walk in and really did not have anything that identified them, other than they stood there and said they asked who they were. Now, again, I think it presumes everybody that's walking in there is dishonest instead of everybody that's walking in there is really who they say they are. And, you know,
Here's the problem you're running into. What we're doing, in effect, is on one hand, we're making it easier to vote, particularly question ballots in other areas of the state. So in order to protect any potential fraudulent activities, and there are fraudulent activities in the election process, and you hear about it all the time. You know, the classic example, of course, is Cook County, Illinois, you know, where they go out and just flat, you know, register and vote dead people and this kind of thing. Now, you know, we're not claiming we have that kind of a fraud in the state of Alaska. But what we are claiming is that you've got to allow that somebody might, at some time down the line, want to do it.
Okay.
And so you want to protect the process so that it can't be done if somebody does want to do it. And so we felt, with the problem that we have with our registration list, Alaska being a highly mobile area, the registration list in my election district are 40% off. 40% of those people that are eligible to vote no longer live there. Now, we know that only one person in the last general election voted twice under their own name, that they sent in an absentee ballot and said they didn't know whether it was going to get in in time, so they were home on election day after all, so they went in and voted again. One person. We don't know how many people voted more than once under another name. You know, it's a relatively simple procedure, particularly in the Anchorage area where you have six election districts, okay, and you have 80-some-odd precincts. It's relatively easy to go over the other side of town, you know, and if you know somebody is no longer in the state, you know, and you know nobody there knows them anyway, to just go in and vote under that person's name. You know, you don't know the election officials. They don't know you, and you just go in and vote.
No, it's pretty hard to do that.
In Kodiak, it's difficult. In Anchorage, it's not. And you have a situation in Anchorage where you could get, and if you're really serious about winning an election, you could get 10 people, and you could go out and cast, you know, in my district, 10 people at the 11 precinct places, and that will mostly, generally, you know, carry at least one of the seats in my election district. So in order to guard against that, we brought that requirement in. Now, if you know the person, you've got no problem whatsoever.
Okay,
if you don't know the person,
the
we're saying, well...
The other thing I was going to say, you may not have complete stuff here again, because I agree that we ought to ask for something, especially the voter registration thing. But I think if the judges there are, you know, pretty confident that it's who the guy says he is, you know, almost anything that would, you know, somebody else standing there saying, yeah, I really do know him, he is so-and-so.
Well, you're right.
And it doesn't say that on my copy, but because it
we
was
left
five
voters,
things.
Yeah, we left the voter's registration card out of here, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay,
you know,
we'll add that into the... into okay. the ID situation.
That's then. Really the point of it. I think that you've got to allow somewhere.
You have official voter registration card under point 225.
I
it's
think
in there.
Another one that you might use.
Official voter registration card is in there.
DHS ID card or something like that, because in the villages they don't have driver's license.
That's
or,
right.
Or
mm-hmm.
Most everybody at least
and
has DHS.
Yeah. In other words, there needs to be more than the listed number there, anything that would identify that person.
It says included but not limited to. So that's
okay.
going to be at the discretion of the election official. All we want is that, you know, either the person personally or at least there's some indication that the person is who they say they are. And that's essentially what we're getting at.
This district doesn't have much of a problem.
Yeah.
No, it's very rare that a different person votes.
You have to get them out once.
It's hard to get them down to vote once.
Under the special procedures for election, which is section 20.045, the absentee voting official would be supplied with their ballots 15 days prior to the election, and I want you to say, amen, I hope so, but would you please get them to Kodiak?
Yes. And then out into the bush.
Because we don't get them 50 days before. We get them like 7 sometimes. And
is that normal, or was it just the last election?
No, it's been normal.
It's been
again,
normal.
It's been the procedure.
For 50
years
now. Just as an example, there's quite Ugandi Bay used to be an election precinct, and that was done away with, and they were given Port Lyons. Well, there's no way that they can get to Port Lyons. They wouldn't even have any way of going there. You'd either have to fly or get a boat. They live 60 miles on the other side of the island, and that could have cost even your election, because there's maybe 15, 20 people there, and they're put into Port Lyons, which is ridiculous, or any other place around here.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, because of weather, the absentee ballots don't get to them, or they don't get back out. And so they've been denied their vote, and I don't know how many other precincts around
the island that this has been done to. There are others in the district out the chain. There's been some problems. And we also need them for the fishermen, which is very essential to get them on time.
We have to wait for the election director to come over and deliver them, but we always have to wait for them.
Another thing that would be good is that I noticed in there was on absentees being present at the voting precinct, so that if a fisherman, say, were to pull into one of these places, that he would be able to pick up an absentee for his district or precinct. And I can see where that would be a big help for a lot of these.
What we've said is this, that anybody can vote anywhere within your own district, within your own election district. Now, Bob, that would mean, in this area, it would be House districts. So it would be
Senate district.
No, it would be Senate district.
Well, it would be both, but yeah, Senate and House. But the Senate district is larger.
Okay, well, it'll be, and we didn't spell that out. It will be House district because the ballots are made up according to House district. Anybody can vote within their own House district in any precinct. If you want to vote outside of your House district, then you've either got to vote absentee or go to one of the absentee voting stations we're going to set up. Now, we're going to establish absentee voting stations at all the major airports in the state. Now, that probably doesn't do you a whole lot of good.
No, well, I'll say that. I don't have identification with
I was thinking one that I know that happened last, and we see it quite frequently here, is cross-district voting or trying to vote, is Kodiak itself and the road system is District 14. Everything else in the island
district
is 15. District 15. And a lot of times those people get caught in town.
Yes, that's right.
And want to vote, and can't vote, can't get home. And the elections are going on here, and you'll see Fort Lyons people want to get in and ballot on their 15, and
can't vote for their representative.
Yeah, the
on that absentee ballot for the fishermen, California sends out to every voter 30 days prior to the election an official polling place information card. You know, every voter before every election gets a card that says, you know, you're registered in this precinct, your polling place is here. When you flip the card over, you have an absentee voter request. Okay, now, it's my impression that the Director of Elections is going to have that in the state of Alaska, so that every election, every voter 30 days prior will receive an absentee ballot request, and it's simply a matter, in a postcard form, it's simply a matter of filling it out, sticking it in the box. It's postage paid.
But that isn't the way it happens out when you live out around. It may take a couple weeks before, or a good week before it gets out there, and you're not sure that maybe the plane can get in for a couple of weeks.
Well, then we better do it more than 30 days before the election, more like 60 days before the election.
Well, and two, if they go by the state printout, they've got them, you know, a great majority of them in the wrong precinct.
Mm-hmm. And the fishermen might have to
and they're
going to
say, you're registered in such and such precinct. The guy's going to figure, well, how in the hell am I going to get there? Because that's not where I live.
They would be mailed to each, California mails them to each registered voter prior to the election. And essentially, they're thinking about doing the same thing.
Here you have to go to the borough to get them. Now, fishermen just don't have time to go to the borough. We were wondering if there is any chance, instead of having to go to the borough, if you could be put some in the fishermen's hall, give some to Carl, the harbor master, or to...
That's how it was done. Jeff picked up a supply.
There.
Jeff, and yes, they handed them out.
We have a provision for appointing registration officials in each of the communities. It hasn't been done to the extent that it could be done. And the registration officials would have ballots available. Now, one of the trade-offs there is that we're going to require some pretty extensive record-keeping of what the number of the ballots they get and the number they went back. In the primary election last time, there was some discrepancies between who got what ballots, which ballots came back, and whatever happened to the ones that they didn't come back anyway. You know, and so one of the trade-offs is we'll agree to allow more registration officials in more areas if, you know, we can get this provision that, you know, they're going to account for the ballots.
Touched on some of it already. The other thing was the cross-districting, and although I understand and partially agree with your rules on 0.203, it does not, in fact, work that way to the best advantage of the voter who does get stuck in Kodiak but lives in Carlock and therefore can no longer vote. Now, it would seem to me that a question ballot at any place that they voted would at least have them voting for the statewide candidates, recognizing they wouldn't be able to vote for the House seat because they were in the wrong district and we wouldn't have those ballots. I don't know how those ballots could be made available in every town for everybody for every district, but the statewide offices, which are probably, also important to them if they do get stuck. And the same thing applies with people that happen to be traveling in the villages here and live in Kodiak and find themselves stuck in one of the villages and unable to get back to town. You know, they, as it is now, they can go in and vote a question ballot. I think the question ballot is a very good thing because it does allow people to vote when they are not, you know, by their precinct or close close enough to it, you know, that in Kodiak, maybe it's not that it's that far in the road system, but if you were coming in from the base and had a flat tire at 7:30 and you got as far as the harbor master, it might be awful handy to be able to go in there and vote, but that was really your main purpose for getting into town, mm-hmm. rather than how the
Does Kodiak have an absentee ballot station where the ballots in every district in the state are located in one spot?
No, the courthouse did have some of those at one time, but, you know, we get the absentee ballots. 2 years ago, the absentee ballots came into the courthouse, and they were the ones that were handing out absentee ballots. You know, if you came, you weren't handing them out, you went there and voted, and you got them. If you wanted an absentee ballot, you had to write the lieutenant governor's office. Of course, some of your problems will be alleviated in that respect by having an election official here that does indeed have things available. For the, you know, both the fishermen, as they said, having somebody that can go down to the harbor master and be sure that they get absentee information would really be of great help, I think.
Well, we do down there at the harbor master's house, that's one of the precincts. We get a lot of out of town people that will be taught here from Anchorage, and so we're the ones who get it.
Okay,
I get them all the time.
If we establish a registration official here in Kodiak that has the ballots for every district in the state, you know, if somebody comes in and they can vote their own ballot here, would that alleviate most of that problem?
Yes, it would. Then at least they'd have a place to be sent to, which is what you're saying. You know, there will be a place established for one person to at least have a question, or two people. Yeah, have two.
Well, even if you had it, like
we have them on time too. And that's now. I talked to Barbara Bird. She can come here if she wants to. And her and her husband, both of them are leaving. And
That, of course, is not a problem of the rules or regs. It's just a problem of it wasn't done.
Location. Another thing is our the borough, they always have somebody there on election day up until all the ballots are in there, and even on state elections, they stay right there. And so there's always someone there that have any of those ballots from around Timbuktu, you know.
Okay.
And I think we'd already touched on the irregularity, which was formerly malconduct, and the I guess I would join with you. I think it's opening up to almost any whim that somebody losing could come in and say didn't happen. I think malconduct would be is the better of the two. And other than that, I think that's all I have on it.
It's happened at test where so often I was thinking every election it never fails that some of your regular voters get left off the list and you ran out. Is there any way there, McCoy?
We run into this problem everywhere, and we have had a problem in the past. You know, you're talking about 220,000 people on the registration list, et cetera, et cetera. In the past, the state has taken those things, processed them, sent it on to the data processing headquarters in Juneau, where they had about priority number 37. And they just didn't do the job. We are going to establish our own registration system and mini computer setup within the Division of Elections. And they will be doing all of their own
I hope so.
It's very embarrassing.
Computer work. And so it's going to take two elections. But with two more elections, with somebody who knows what they're doing and keeping track of it all, I think you're going to see them really get straightened out so you don't lose these people, you know, somewhere along the line.
You don't lose them. They come back.
You lose them on the list, yeah.
Yeah, they just spit it off that computer.
And then, you know, and I've run into people in Anchorage that have voted, you know, five times, always fill out a question ballot, and they still have to fill out a question ballot because they never fill out a registration form. And even some that filled out a registration form and nothing happened to the registration form. And there are some people that have been purged and have re-registered two or three times, but they won't accept the registration because they've already been purged and they haven't voted since they've been purged. But they weren't able to vote because they were question ballots, you know, and so we've had some real problems. But I think that, you know, everybody's aware of it, and we are getting a new programmer, and we're making up our own, and I think it's going to work out fine. It'll just take a couple more elections.
It's only taken 5 years.
Well, look how far we are. We're already this far.
I have a thing under this 0.360 marking on ballots. Okay, you say in here, write-in names or write-in stickers would have to be marked in the square opposite the name. the last state election, they did not have to put an X in a square if they wrote the name in. Do they have to put an X
in
their one?
Okay, that's on page three. Yes.
You didn't the last one. Mm-hmm.
You didn't on the last one.
Uh-oh.
And it was up to a court decision. And we said, if you're going to write in a name, that's fine. But if you use, if you write in a name or put on a sticker, you have still got to physically mark that square.
Then you do not
square.
Count it?
Or you don't count it. If they don't mark the square, then they don't count it.
Well, that wasn't what,
that's what we were told at the other state election.
No, it wasn't the last time.
No, but this will be.
But this will be.
This is what I had.
There was a great deal of confusion over it. In fact, the Hickel sticker, I guess, was the one that tried, that printed the name and then printed an X over here, too. And there was confusion over it. So we specifically said that, you know, you can write in names, but if you write in names or put on a sticker, you've got to make a physical mark over on the right-hand side. It wasn't enough just to write in the name, that you had to indicate that you were going to vote for that person
that
you wrote in.
That's going to be that way now?
And that's, that is, will be that way under the new law.
Oh, because it wasn't.
Well, I think there is... Whose determination is it on names that might be spelled incorrectly, whether they'll be accepted?
We never, ever discussed that.
We had one...
Guidelines set up on something like that?
Nope.
I think what we were told last time, Dave, was that if it might be misspelled a little bit, but if it was still clear enough to know, I mean, I'm trying to think of a name that could be like, that was the boards.
Yeah.
Four people there decided, you know, who this really, you know, does, is it clear enough to really know? I can't think of any that weren't, I'm trying to think if there was any.
You might have one letter out of place,
I can think
you know.
Of
well, like a name like Ephemia that were on there. Could very well be spelled with an I rather than an E.
And let the U out.
Yeah. Or, yeah, leave the U out. But you basically, and I guess it would then be left up to the board, at least it was, I know, a few years ago, left up to the board to determine whether or not that really was who they meant. And, you know,
there's no problem
well,
there.
It could happen.
Yeah, there's, it, you know, there could be a problem, and it's something that we should address, whether we should spell it out or not. But I would suspect we'd leave that to regulation to the Director of Elections.
Okay, you say you could get a computer tape of mailing and residence addresses. Okay, and it says that it costs. How much costs?
You can get that now.
It costs $2 or $4 last time I did it.
Okay, there's two things you can get now. You can get the registered voters printout for about $3 a district. You know, that comes... They put a new one out about every 6 months or something. But what that comes off of is a state master computer tape that, you know, lists everything else. Now, in the past, professional computer operations have gotten copies of this tape, and, you know, candidates go in and say, well, I want them by home address, you know, I want them by, you can't get age, you don't have that information on there, but, you know, I want them in blocks, I want them, however, I want all... zip codes, who give me all these zip codes and all these zip codes and all these for mailings and stuff like that. The only thing we added to that, that's available now, the only thing we added to that is a provision that everybody's home address will be on there also, because right now all that requires a mailing address. We didn't specify how much it would be. In the past, it's been about $50 to get the tape updated and everything else. But nobody gets their own computer tape. You know, what... I don't know how they do it here. In Anchorage, there's one or two outfits that keep it updated, and then everybody goes to them and gets the stuff from the same outfit. But it's too expensive to get a new one each time. We're just saying the information is available there if anybody wants it.
You had a good question, Kate. Ask them about that.
I have one other question. Too.
Thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
On the case with the city here.
Why the...
There wasn't any particular motivation behind that, other than the fact that 1,000 votes has been the number since statehood. In 1959, at the general election, there were something like 65,000 votes cast. In 1978 general election, there were 130,000 votes cast. So in essence, you more than doubled your the number of voters in the state of Alaska. And we felt that the number of people that should have to sign something, you know, for a statewide candidate should be increased as the population has increased. In other words, you should have to show enough support out there to not to be wasting everybody's time. We didn't feel that 2.5% was excessive.
I would like to see it be be a higher percentage.
We tried that. We didn't get that. We had
just the reason that you mentioned, not to waste people's time and taxpayers' money.
The idea was 4%. Somebody wanted 2%. So then 3%. So they made it a 2.5%.
Be consistent. I'm concerned too about the idea of recall. Page 1745, 500. To require at least 100 qualified voters on a petition for recall. I would think that you would want us to be consistent and stay with a percentage and be the requirement there for a percentage figure rather than a static figure such as.
What page are you on?
Page 27.
I forget a figure like that. May we start over again? We were all moving back because Louise had to leave.
I don't see that. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. Okay, here's the way a recall works. You have to go out and if you want to recall the governor, you go out and get a petition signed by 10% of the number that voted in the last general election. There were 130,000 voted, so you need 13,000 signatures to officially apply for an official recall petition. 13,000 registered voters. When you go in with your list of 13,000 registered voters, you have to give them 100 names of qualified voters who have agreed to be sponsored and circulate, a minimum of 100 names, have agreed to be sponsored and circulate this official recall petition. That's what the 100 names are. You've got to have 25% of the November 78 election, which was 130,000 people, so 25% of there is somewhere around 32,000, 33,000 votes, signatures. So the recall is a two-tier process. You go out and you get 13,000 people, registered voters, who say, I want to recall the governor. Then you get an official petition. You give them 100 names and people are willing to act as sponsors and circulate these petitions. Then you get 32,000 signatures. And if you get 32,000 signatures, at that point, they call an official recall.
That 32,000 represents a percentage?
Represents 25% of the number that voted in the last gubernatorial election.
It only takes 2.5% to get on a ballot. It takes 25%
to recall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the power of the incumbent.
Yeah, I would like to see more consistent figure used for all those.
I agree. I would also agree that I feel that the initiative petitions should require a larger percentage of people. They should require more support than just 10% of the last election or 13,000 people to get an initiative on the ballot. Political realities are you're not going to change that. That's not going to get to the legislature. There's a group of folks in the legislature who don't feel that like you do, and so they'll fight to keep that figure as low as possible. It was a struggle to get it moved from 1,000 votes to 2.5%.
That would be the legislators who would fight to keep that percentage high on recall provisions too.
We didn't touch recall provisions. That was not touched on, to speak of. The only thing we did change is from 1,000 to 2,000.
I just had one last question myself to go back pretty much to the beginning. The registration of voters in 07.040. As I read this, I'm not totally confused. Persons under 18 will be able to register any time within 90 days of their 18th birthday. I grant you, I'm ignorant about the voting procedures.
Okay, that's a misprint.
As I read that, before you're 18, if the election is before the 90 days, if you register before you're 18, suppose the election is before the 90 days.
Could we add a sentence to that, providing the election is 90 days away?
Well, let's see what it says in the bill. It might be summarized wrong there. The object was that so somebody 16 years old couldn't register 2 years in advance of an election. You know, we wanted to to say you can register ahead of time, but let's not get carried away and register too far ahead of time because, you know, then you have an administrative problem.
If that's the case, then I am not in favor of registering before you're 18.
You can vote when you're 18, but you have to be registered. But you are correct. It can be, because my son, who was not yet 18, was on the registers list for last fall's election. But being on the board, I simply told him he couldn't vote.
Okay, we've got a problem there. You're right. We'll look into that and reword it. The object is that, you know, you can vote when you're 18. What we are trying to do is say, well, you can register a little bit before you're 18, but we don't want you registering when you're 12 or 13 or 14, and you can do that now under the under statute.
Why can't we just change that to read within 30 days? You have to register 30 days before an election anyway, and then if election is 30 days away, you're legal.
Well, I think the reasoning here is the League of Women Voters has a registration at the schools, and
I think they're going to have to be more careful in checking ages too.
We'll look at that point, I think. Okay, do you want to start at the top then? And we'll just go right down, and if anybody has a question. Now, does everybody have this particular sheet? We have three different pieces of paper floating around.
No, you don't have an extra one. I couldn't find mine. I
have one. We'll get back down to the thing. See if I can find out. Thank you for coming by. Do you have one of these?
I have one, right? Like Hazel, I was one of the last minutes. I thought it was 75%.
You don't have an extra view, huh?
What's that? Suddenly. Is that this one you're looking at now?
Yeah.
This guy is
Hazel, right. He's our new chairman in the petition for.
Okay. Why don't we just go down, and if anybody has any comments one way or the other, just pop up, okay? The first one, of course, is administration of elections. Louise talked about that, establishing a state election board. And in fact, it does insulate the lieutenant governor from the process. That's what we wanted to do. What we're trying for, and several states have it, most states have it, as a matter of fact, is a professional director of elections that's outside of the political process. Whether that's even possible, I'm not really sure. That's what we're trying to do with this particular section.
Well, would there be a person in each town or village then who...
It'll still be like it is right now. You'll have, except the director of elections will be, in fact, running it on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I realize at the head, but...
It's almost a change in name only. We're just making the director of elections the state... the number one election official rather than lieutenant governor.
Yes, but I thought from something that you said that there would be a person to receive material in each.
Well, that's different.
Okay, that'll be established by the director of elections.
Okay.
She'll do that herself.
First, we have to do this then.
Okay, qualifications of voters.
Question.
Yes.
Well, I have always been opposed to a felon. I think there are degrees. I would hate to think that someday a person who had raped and killed an individual may someday be my governor.
You think they should be able to vote but not be a candidate?
No. I do not think they should be allowed to vote. That's where I'm saying there should be degrees of felony crimes.
Well, I'm sure that there's a lot of people in the legislature that agree with you, and that will be a controversial part. That was a bill introduced last year that didn't go anywhere and was inserted into the code, and I'm sure the legislature will fight that one out.
There are felons that are not as severe, who I think should have established voting rights given back to them. It's just the level of it.
The crime. crime that they committed would indicate.
Length of sentence means nothing. That's kind of a good point. I know that's what I'm saying. Don't get it.
Maybe I should have brought it up with the other one. Louise mentioned about instructing election officials and registrars. And by the same time, I have a list now of half a dozen people who want to become registrars. They couldn't find out how to do it from the city. They couldn't find out how to do it from the borough. I called Octavia, and she says, well, there is no form. I asked if there was a form they could fill out and submit. There is no form. I said, well, how can anybody become a registrar then? And she says, well, I guess you could submit their names. Now, this isn't very definite. Is there something set up, some rules, they can only have so many registrars in districts?
That's
or
what
precincts
we did have.
Or
that's what we did have, only so many in each district. When
well, how
first started
how do we find out, and how can people submit their names that
we
want
are,
to become
we
registrars?
We are going to increase the number of registrars, and there's going to be a rather intensive registrar training program. Octavia, by the way, has resigned as election supervisor.
I hope the next one in line isn't going up there, is she?
Going up where?
To take Octavia's place, because when she came here, she didn't know nothing. That other one that was sent over here that time. not a thing.
Well, are they going to set up, have a form then that people can sit out, make out? Can they go to the borough and get a form and say, I want to become a registrar and send it in? Or how
yes,
are they going to...
Yes, the new director of the director of elections is going to come up with a program to get more registrars in the state of Alaska, particularly in the outlying areas. We don't, you know, have that kind of a problem. I can't tell you how she's going to do it. I can just say that if you write Patty Ann, she'll probably respond to you. The new supervisor in the Anchorage office is going to be Karen Ann Ward. I don't know how many of you know Karen. She worked for Lieutenant Governor Lowell Thomas for a long time, and she's a longtime Alaskan, was raised in Ketchikan. She should start, I think.
Well, if people now, then these people want to become registrars,
yes.
Should they maybe go to the borough office and have the borough clerk perhaps submit their name to somebody, or who do they submit it
to? I tell you what I do.
To?
I'd wait until November 2nd, and then I'd write the new supervisor of elections in the Anchorage area and ask her, and I think you'll probably get a response out of her.
Did you give her name there, Karen Ward?
I don't have a pencil. Who's? What's your name?
Karen Ward.
Right now, she wants to set up a registration drive in the post office, and there's only about three of us that are there.
Well, I was just getting big people.
Yeah, I know.
That
may be
a
problem.
Problem.
Like,
right.
But there's so many people that want to
look for identification.
Jeff is the registrar.
You know, we have 50 people running
for
office and everything.
But we do not very register. Register. Fishermen coming and going, and they won't take the time out to the
building. Yeah, but two registered voters can register another person.
Yes.
All you have to do is
witnesses.
Two witnesses of two registered voters. I was going to tell them that. So you don't need a registrar, actually, if you have two registered voters registering people.
But
all they're going to do is sign
cards.
Yeah, but right. You know how fishermen are. They don't have the time. If they run in to talk to Jeff for a minute, and he asks them, are you registered? Say no. Well, register. If he is a registrar, he can easily do it because it's hard to get them guys to register. I now that I remember, I took some absentee ballots last time myself and another friend, and we went down the harbor and we went all on that person property. We went to all the small boats and all the fishermen, and half of them guys weren't registered. I'm sure. And so if we had somebody there that could register. When they come into the office and catch them.
And it has to be, they have to know how to become a registrar.
Here's the operative phrase we put in. The registration official shall be qualified voter of the state. First of all, you need at least two per precinct, but you can't have more. That's at the discretion of the director of elections. And then you go on from there. The registration official shall be a qualified voter of the state and shall take an oath to honestly, faithfully, and promptly perform the duties of his office. Training for registrars shall be provided by the election supervisor. Upon the completion of a training course, passage of a test may be required. It wouldn't be terribly difficult. Registration officials shall be evaluated by the election supervisor based on the completeness of the registration forms, timely filing, blah, blah. A registration official may be removed by the Director of Elections for any just cause, including but not limited to the late filing of a voter registration form or the filing of incomplete forms which cause a voter to be qualified. One of the problems we ran into was there are a lot of registrars on the rolls that are not active at all, and they're simply not registering any people, but they're taking up space so that it doesn't look like any more are needed. So if you're not, you know, relatively active as a registrar, then they're going to give that job to somebody else who might want it. So I think we're going to take care of the problem you just mentioned.
Well, it still doesn't say how tell anybody how to become a registrar. There is no way.
Okay, the Director of Elections shall appoint one or more registration officials in each precinct. The direction of officials comes up with procedures to do it. You're right. It doesn't say, you know, you have to write the Director of Elections and request. But that's the thing to do, and I think you'll probably get some action out of Karen if you write to her on November 2nd when she takes over. There is going to be a serious effort made to increase the number of registration officials, and there is money appropriated to pay for the training. So hopefully by next election we'll have that particular problem taken care of. Okay, where were we then? Qualifications of voters, registration of voters. Do we have any more questions about that? Okay, the two-year purge. Again, I'm not sure that's even going to get through the legislature. That's one of the two or three real controversial issues in here.
Well, how about getting deceased names taken off the ballot?
They
would be purged in 2 years.
Well, yeah, but if it isn't going to go through, it's 4 years.
People would rather have them off.
We've established in here somewhere that somebody will report to the Division of Elections when somebody dies.
Well, you know what I do online? On that, you know, master computer sheet that has to go back with your stuff, if they're deceased, I put in red by their name, deceased.
Yeah, but
The clerk can write a letter to the state on letterhead and everything. Like, you know, all the large streets, you know, get them in the precinct they belong and all this.
I know, but you see, it has to be from
there. There are a lot of details that can be picked up and done in the clerk's office.
It doesn't matter.
We've made provisions in the bill that the Division of Elections will be notified. The problem you run into when people move out and don't tell you about is that there are 17,000 registration jurisdictions in the United States. Most states, you know, the registration is done at the county level and not the state level. There's only five states that have a system like ours where the prime responsibility rests with the state. And there's 17,000 of them, and get letters flying back and forth on reciprocal agreements just isn't practical. So that's why, you know, some of us want to move to the two-year purge and just make those lists cleaner and less bulky.
Well, I have never received, you know, we have a little form when someone is registered someplace else and they come to Alaska to register. I have them fill a little form out and send it back to their precinct that they have changed, moved. I've never received one. And I know a lot of people have moved out of Alaska and registered someplace else. Do other states have this form?
They're supposed to, but they don't. And the reason is because there's too many registration districts out there. There's 17,000 registration districts. Every once in a while, I guess, we'll get a form from somebody or a letter from somebody saying, we've registered to go here. Please take us off the list. It doesn't happen very often. The normal process is 4 years later, they haven't voted, and we take the name off the list. Okay, going on down to anything else on registration of voters. Now, if you have any questions, please speak up, and I'm just going to go on down the list. Election district and officials. That makes sure that we have enough people on the election judges and officials in rural areas. You probably don't have the problem in Kodiak. We don't have it in Anchorage. We have it in some areas of the state where there's none of the parties are particularly organized. General procedures.
I would like to comment on 225.
Okay.
We did already.
Yeah, well, I didn't get a chance. Louise is gone now. Somebody else can talk.
What is your name?
Sorry. Ruth Hansen. Okay. I haven't received a new voter registration card in about oh, I don't know, 10 or 12 years. They do get lost. If we're going to have use for them, it might be a good idea to send everybody a new one. I haven't changed precincts in 20 years. The only reason I got one 10 years ago is they changed the name of the precinct or something.
I had several requests for that too. This last election, they said, how do you get a new card? And all I could do was fill out one of the registration things and put on the bottom, would appreciate a new card.
Their voter number.
Yes, and their voter number.
Okay, it's my impression that when we were talking before about they're sending out absentee ballot requests 30 days before the election or something, which we thought should go to probably 60, that you would have some kind of voter ID on the flip side of that that would prove that you're that voter and you voted this particular place. And I would suggest that that would be suitable as a voter ID card. Mm-hmm. It would be a postcard type thing. It'd probably be some kind of a rip-out thing, you know. You could, you know, rip off the absentee application, and that would leave you with your little voter ID thing.
Well, but I'm not going to vote absentee.
No, he's just saying in case you want to.
All right.
Yeah, this comes with tutors.
Okay, that takes care of 225.
At the top of page 3, would prohibit the counting of ballots before the polls are closed. Is that not already illegal?
No. Remember in Anchorage during the primary election, we had that early pickup where they wanted to get the ballots counted early, so they picked up the precincts in some of the urban areas starting at 4 o'clock. They chopped it off at 4 and went and picked them up, held them until 8 o'clock and started counting immediately at 8 o'clock. Well, it turned into a real snafu. And they had all kinds of problems. So we just said, no, all the ballots stay right at the precinct until 8 o'clock. There won't be any early pickups. Now, what we did go on and say on the absentee ballots was that we did want to count it, we wanted to begin counting at 8 o'clock election night. One of the problems we ran into in Alaska is because of the tremendous number of question ballots and absentee ballots, a lot of the elections aren't decided for a week or 2 weeks after election night. Perception-wise, that's bad, because everybody thinks, well, somebody's out there finagling with the votes now. So we want to get as many ballots as we can counted election night. We've provided that 7 days now before the election, the local boards can start canvassing the absentee ballots so that they all can be ready to count at 8 o'clock when election night closes. Now, in the Anchorage area, what that means is that there's going to be a lot of ballots just sitting at the computer, absentee, about 3/4 of the absentee ballots coming prior to the election. In the Anchorage area. So they're going to be counted right away at 8 o'clock. They're all canvassed and ready to go, and that's the first thing that will be counted. A week later, when they count the remainder of them, you know, you're not going to have nearly the number of votes, and so you're going to have a more direct count on election night of just who won the election and who didn't. You won't have that large lack. About 10% of our ballots up here are normally counted anywhere from a week to 2 weeks after the election. We normally run about 5% question ballots and about 5% absentees. We're just trying to cut down the number of them. So that's what that 8 o'clock thing does, and we hope it works out. Now, you have a problem in that Patty Ann says, well, you know, gee, a lot of our people don't want to, they don't want to count these things after being there all day at the election, and she's right, you know. But
well, that's in the rules, that you have to continue.
How do you do it in Kodiak?
Do you
count the ballots at the precincts here?
Yes.
Okay, see, we don't do that in Anchorage. Well, in Anchorage, we take all the ballots down to the central computer and they run them through the machine.
Oh.
It's faster to do them at the precinct level, if you want to know the truth. You probably get your results in here faster than we do. In our last municipal election, we didn't get the results until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
And we're using computers.
Oh. Well, borough takes days to get all that in, but city election is determined with 10:30 at night.
Burley, they're waiting for the islands, and you know the planes have cut down. They do not fly on weekends to the villages anymore. They cut down some of the bush stations to one delivery a week. Some two weather providing. So if it's one delivery a week, it's you know.
How do you count your absentee ballots?
For local. Our borough assembly and do
what
city
about,
council.
What about for state? Yeah. Is that done at the state level?
The state, yeah, we send them into the state.
Okay. In any case, yours wouldn't probably be counted.
When they get there. 4 days.
Okay. Now, we've done another thing with absentee
so
ballots.
From here to Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. We have said
that all absentee ballots will be hand-marked ballots as opposed to those perforated punch cards. Okay. In a lot of areas, we have perforated punch cards. If you take a pencil or something and it's already pre-punched, you know, you just stick out the one. The problem you run into is that you go, anytime you go to a computer that's counting those things, you have all these little things underneath the computer, you know, they're falling out.
We don't have a computer.
So everybody's going to go to that hand card marking thing just like you do out there. It's going to take longer to count, but on the other hand, it's going to be more accurate. We've also stopped the facsimile punching at the Division of Elections, you know, where they might get a card that's been kicked out of the computer, they might get a... You don't have that out. You don't,
nope.
You don't have a little voting machine.
No,
everything's
no.
Hand.
All by everything's hand.
We're all fast.
We've got the little punch cards. You know. Oh. What's happened in the past, if one of them couldn't go through the machine, and you know, you're talking about several hundred, you know, then the girls would take them out and repunch them as to what they were. And we said, no, we're not going to repunch anything. We're going to just, we'll hand tally them just like a hand-marked ballot.
Tampering.
We just didn't want to. We didn't want the chance of happening. Now, let me also say that there were two counts last year, one count in the primary and one count in the general. There weren't that many changes between on the actual count between what the computers and everybody else came up with and what the recount came up with. The changes in the elections that occurred last year in both Hammond's and mine were the fact that new ballots were counted. It wasn't that any of the votes had switched around in the recount itself. It's just they counted more ballots because more absentee ballots had come in,
mm-hmm.
and some of the question ballots were counted because of the Supreme Court decision. Okay, so that nobody's saying that the counts weren't right, you know, and we're not saying anything did happen. We just there's just too much paper floating around, too many ballots, you know, sticking here and in this cabinet, that cabinet, everywhere else. We're just trying to cut down on the amount of accountability.
I think our municipal attorney wanted to scare me, and he sent me the court case on Hammond-Hinkle bit.
It scared me. I had some time to read that after my election.
Let me ask you a question on, like, a map like this here, like, say, for us people here. Okay, could it be, like, one registrar in each of the precincts that the state would pay for a map like this? They're very costly, I know, to get made, you know, individual people.
I get them for you for free.
You can.
Well, you got the machine, but it still costs the city money still for the paper and everything, see?
Well, here's the process. Normally they say the registrar doesn't put on the precinct or the district number because they don't know where people live. I'm a registrar in my district, and I know those lines, you know, right down the middle
yeah.
of the street.
Yep, see, our place
so
keeps changing, and they keep on annexing here. You
yeah,
see what I mean?
A block at a time.
A lot at a time. So we really do need a map, and I think the state should give one registrar that has really worked in that precinct one a map, and the state should, I think, should pay that.
But
and I think
state doesn't know.
It would prevent a lot of this hassle and this misregistration of people and putting them in the wrong districts. Like, I have one person here, her name is Ann Kusick. They had her on the mainland.
Well, this goes
with
on.
A Kodiak address.
Yeah.
Now she's in precinct two, and she has lived in precinct one all the time.
Mm-hmm. And you'll have a husband in one precinct
yes.
and a wife in the other precinct.
That's because husbands don't know where to register.
Okay.
I've changed my
no,
it's
just...
Don't ask me my street address, just ask me my
dog. I myself would like the state to supply a map because I don't have anything to really look at.
Well, I haven't thought about it.
That's why I make everybody... I think when you guys work as registrars, have one of these maps
but
and
if
you can
have,
show
like,
you where you
10 registrars in one precinct, I think that is a waste of money. But I think one registrar that has really worked should get one of those maps.
Okay, I'll talk to Karen about that. We're probably better off having registrars making mistakes or at least aware of the area and what change has been made rather than people out of Anchorage who, you know, just have to look at a map.
I'd rather see us putting it down instead of them because the way Octavia had told us, you know, if you don't know where they should be at, just leave it blank. We'll put them where they belong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's
and
always
there,
too.
Yeah, she always said, leave it blank.
I'd like to comment. It has nothing to do with this. But our last local election... Kay gave us a master sheet of the registered voters in the borough, and it certainly was helpful.
It cut down on question ballots.
Just tremendously.
Okay, I pushed for that on the cross-district, cross-precinct thing, where you can vote anywhere in your district. If you're going to allow that, you have to have master registration deeds and sheets at every district in the precinct. You know, otherwise you don't know if the person's a registered voter or not.
Right. Or where they should go vote. They'll go to one precinct and say, where should I go vote? Well, you don't vote here, but
why
I don't know
why
does
the
where.
State send like for how many precincts we have a master sheet, you know, like we have four right here. Because I worked with none.
Yeah. She didn't have.
And I have the most registered voters in my precinct. And I have always had the most voters in my precinct.
Well, here's the problem. We never really, we've never officially by statute allowed cross-district and cross-precinct voting.
Even if you don't allow it, though, even if you say go to your own precinct, it is so helpful to be able to tell them where to go.
Where to go. I'd have to get on a phone call all over this town to find out where to send them because I don't have a master sheet.
Well, I would really like
I'll
to
get
see
it for
put.
Sure. You know, next time, what was there, five?
Well, I think the state should provide it, like, well, four precincts. Well, Bell's Flats area, there's five with them now.
I don't see anything wrong with voting cross-precinct as long as you know that they're a registered voter within your district. Because if you can cut down on those question ballots, there's that business of not having to worry about counting them so much later. You get a more accurate count.
Well, the thing is, we're the downtown precinct, and we get the people who are working downtown who want to come in and vote there. And old-time Alaska get pretty hostile if they don't get to do what they want to.
That's one of the problems with allowing cross-precinct voting, because, you know, one of the arguments is that, well, everybody's going to vote downtown where it's convenient, and you're not going to be able to administrate the number of ballots.
But that's not really...
No.
The only ones we've ever had come in are the ones that are really up against it, because most people like to go to their precinct. And they're always talking about trying to have it easy for people to vote because we don't want to discourage voters. And now with our energy type thing, it makes a difference for some.
Okay, we'll look into that master registration list and maybe registration maps for each district at each precinct.
Precinct, that would be great.
At the expense shouldn't be, you know, terribly.
That makes voters happier, and that's what we like, because then they come back.
A friend of mine had to go to three places.
Yes.
They changed her registration.
Right, yeah.
They changed her precinct, and she went there. And they said, "Well, we don't have you." And go there, and she went there, and, "Well, we don't have you. Try that place," and she finally got in.
That's right. And this goes on many, many.
But
times.
See, I also, again, like you're saying, this no cross district thing. But see, I have some of the city people that were coming to these Lamaze classes out there at the school, and they were late for their class, but they wanted to vote. Well, I says, "The only thing you can vote."